The following is a paid presentation. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of Shiawassee Radio.
This is your cell. This is your bunk.
This is the Jail Visit on Shiawassee Radio, live from the Cofield Oil and Propane Studios. Here's attorney Bill Amadeo.
All right, I think we're live. I'm Bill Amadeo from Grable & Associates, and tonight I had a few people contact me about a Shiawassee case that happened today. And I just want to be clear on a few things. There's a lot of heat. I sold a Tom Mankey article and people call me after the Tom Mankey article. Let me be clear as a criminal defense lawyer. Number one. As a criminal defense lawyer, I have a job to do, and my job is to protect my clients. Scott Corner, as a prosecutor, has a job to do, and that's protect the community. And I think Tom Mankey has lost sight of that, because I think he's a shill for Robert Hinojosa. And let me just be clear. If Robert Hinojosa becomes prosecutor in Shiawassee, I'm going to get a second office in Shiawassee, because I'm going to make money hand over fist. Robert couldn't hold Scott Corner's jockstrap. I'm going to talk about the Mitts matter and break a few things down for people. So I know Corner's getting some shit right now, and I know people are saying how brilliant I am, and that's not... I'm going to just be real about some things, okay? First of all, on this case, the case was not Scott's. It was an associate. It was an APA. And the first APA on the case, we negotiated. And that APA charged things wrong. And I called him on it. And I basically scared that APA into a dismissal. What I did was I waived a preliminary examination. And then the complaining witness did not want to testify at trial. And I filed motions to get things dismissed. And before it could be dismissed with prejudice, Scott Corner called on what was going on, and he dismissed the case without prejudice. Now, Corner dismissed the case without prejudice because he wanted to make sure he could get justice for the victim. And he knew if I had won my motions, it would have been a dismissal with prejudice. So let's get that clear, number one. After that, the client got recharged. And Nicole Robertson, who was the chief APA, was on this case. Now, here was the thing when Nicole Robertson took the case over. And this is where the criminal defense stuff comes into play. They're talking about this individual that he had a prior record. And that is true. He did. But when Nicole refiled, or the APA that refiled the case, his prior record was more than 10 years old. So I argued the 10-year gap, which lowered his guidelines dramatically. That's criminal defense work. When I made that motion, Scott Corner was pissed off about it, and he wanted my client to go to prison for a very long time. But he also was handling murder cases and rape cases, and this case did not rise to the level of that. So I negotiated with Nicole. Scott was working on much bigger cases. This is not one of my bigger cases, guys. This was not EMU. This was not Sybil Vita. You know, this was just a run-of-the-mill case with a 4-year felony. Nicole Roberts and I went back and forth. I knew the law was on our side with the 10-year gap. Corner wanted the case to go to trial because he did not want my client getting the deal he did, at which point I prepared for trial. Now, while I was preparing for trial against Nicole Robertson, Corner was working on capital cases, including the murder cases that happened. Nicole Robertson then made me an offer that, quite frankly, I could not tell my client not to take. And the offer was extremely low, and we thought the guidelines would be 0 to 17. But when Nicole made that offer, I knew that some of those cases would fall, his priors would fall outside the 10-year gap, and his guidelines would actually go down to 0 to 6. So knowing the 10-year gap worked to my client's favor, Corner was really pissed off about this, and he wanted to pull the plea and go to trial. In the exact words in a text message from Corner, I want that motherfucker to go to prison. And I'm like, well, if you got to go to trial, we will go to trial. But what happened at that point is the victim in this case did not want to testify. So I want to be very clear for the world, and I know Shiawassee, the world's going to watch this. And there's a reason I'm on my phone right now, because I'm dealing with some craziness myself in my world. That'll be a story for another time. But I want to be blatantly clear on this. Scott Corner did not give me the deal that was accomplished today. And he wanted to go to trial. He also wanted to protect a victim from having to deal with me on cross-examination. I waived a preliminary examination with the understanding I did not want the victim to have to testify. I did play the scoring guidelines to my advantage with Nicole Robertson. Nicole is the one who gave me the deal without Scott's knowledge, because Scott was working on murder cases, and my client only got 9 months in prison, 9 months in jail, as opposed to 7 years in prison, because I played the scoring guidelines to our advantage, and Nicole was asleep at the wheel, in my opinion. With that being stated, this deal really pissed off Corner. He wanted to go to trial, but what he had to decide in this case is, would he want to really put the victim through trial? And trust me, I tell you, the victim's family did not want her to have to testify. I know people are going to say that my client got too good of a deal here, and I know Tom Mankey's kind of a joke when he goes, a pedophile got a deal here. The only reason the alleged pedophile got the deal he did is because his lawyer played the scoring guidelines to his advantage. I outworked the previous assistant prosecutor on this case, and that is my job. I'm not going to apologize for that, but I will be very clear with this. It pissed Corner off, and when he wanted to pull the deal from me, the victim was scared to testify. So between this kid being scared to testify and between me understanding the 10-year gap, my client did get the deal that he got. I think I could have won this case at trial. Scott would have rather gone to trial than give me the deal he got. But once Nicole put the wheels in motion and she was the one in touch with the victim's family, this is the way things happened. I want to be very clear when people watch this and share this. Scott Corner did not give me the deal today. Tom Mankey lied about that. And Tom Mankey is lying about that because he wants Robert Hinojosa to become the prosecutor. I know Scott Corner and I know Robert Hinojosa. And Scott Corner, I have some very major cases going on right now. Capital cases going on right now. And I can't sit here as an officer of the court and let Corner get bashed when he basically told me to go fuck myself on this. He was against me from day one. There were so many battles on this. When the previous APA dismissed the case because basically I scared him into it, it was Scott who brought it back to life. And then like any good elected official, he passed it off to one of his other APAs. And nothing against Nicole Robertson, but she just quit on no notice. She left him holding the ball. And yeah, I took advantage of that for my client. I have a job to do. I'm not going to apologize for what happened in court today, other than to say, I understand why Judge Stewart exceeded guidelines. I understand why Scott Corner was pissed off about the deal. But there was no testimony preserved because I waived a preliminary examination. When he got charged, I played with the 10-year gap. And the other option, which Tom Mankey may not have liked, is if I won this case with a not guilty, or if this case had to be dismissed without any justice. If you got a problem with anybody, you could have a problem with me, you could have a problem with the Michigan legislator. They made the 10-year gap. I took advantage of it. And as your criminal defense lawyer, it is my job to get you the best possible outcome. So I don't apologize for that, but I'm going to tell you, I look up to Scott Corner, I view him as a friend and a mentor, and he was against me on this. Tom Mankey's story is a goddamn lie. That's not the way things went down today. And when Judge Stewart said that he wanted more justice for the victim, he put the blame appropriately on the legislator. They made the 10-year gap, and a good defender will know how to play with that. When you have a client with priors, and it's over 10 years, you make a strong 403 argument. I'm not going to give a whole law school lecture right now, but that's what happened. That is how I got the deal I got. It was not because anybody in Shiawassee wanted me to get that deal. And I will say, my client has a family, and they've been through a lot themselves. I had two agendas here, guys. And this is always an agenda I have in these type of cases. Number one, I have to protect my client. But number two, and quote me on this, okay? I try to protect children. It is not my goal to put a child on the stand if I don't have to. And it's never my goal to put a child on the stand of preliminary examination. And I've lost a lot of money doing that. Because some people say I'm too soft when it comes to kids. If we go to trial and I have to do cross-examination, I'm going to be as gentle as possible. But I have a big reputation and a big personality when I walk in the room, and that kid was scared of that. And I didn't mean to throw any fear towards that child. But Scott Corner had to balance the equities here. Nicole Robertson left the prosecutor's office and left him with a bad deal. There was a chance that they got no justice for their victim, and the victim did not want to testify. If Tom Mankey ever had a complex situation like that, I'd love to hear about it, as opposed to an idiot that just sat in the jury box and posted goddamn lies to help Robert Hino Joza win an election. Again, guys, I cannot apologize for the outcome I got, but I will tell you this, that outcome came with protection of the victim as well. Understand that. And when I got the outcome, Corner was not only protecting the victim, but he was doing the best possible outcome under the situation that he was dealt there. The first APA charged it wrong, and I took advantage of that. The second time around, I took advantage of the 10-year gap. The only thing you could be mad at Scott Corner about is that he's not a member of the Michigan legislation. He's not a legislator. You going to hold that against the man? And I'll tell you this right now. If Robert Hino Joza was the prosecutor on this case, my client would not have got 9 months in jail. He'd probably be calling me watching a baseball game right now. So I hope the Shiawassee County people that love to stalk Facebook understand that. If you want to bash Scott Corner for what the fuck happened in court today, you better really take a good look in the mirror. So if it wasn't for him, my client wouldn't be doing 9 months. And if it was Robert Hino Joza on the other side, I would not be as kind, as gentle as I was. The thing I like about this prosecutor's office, even though they tell me to go fuck myself quite a bit, is that we can have professional dialogue. When there's a case, you have to balance what is justice, what is the victim going to go through. Is the victim telling the truth? Do I want to put that victim on the stand? There's a lot that goes into this. And for some idiot to just write a story riding in on his motorcycle who's basically compromising the facts, that's bullshit. Be very clear. You should thank Scott Corner that my client got 9 months in jail. Because if Robert Hino Joza was the prosecutor, my client would have got zero. And I would have taken it to trial, and I would have beat his goddamn ass. Quote me on that.
The Jail Visit with attorney Bill Amadeo from McManus and Amadeo. Connect with McManus and Amadeo at McManusAmadeo.com or call 800-392-7311. This is The Jail Visit on Shiawassee Radio.
You know, today I'm going to share a story from court this week. And, you know, what happened in court this week, this one particular story, it led to a lot of self-reflection, and it was such a crazy travel week. And, you know, one of my fatal flaws, if you would, is the end of the night. I have my phone with me. And clients start texting. And emails keep coming in. And you're trying to fix people's problems. And I thought about different jobs I've been offered. I've been offered big money to go to California. Big money to go to New York. Big money to go back to New Jersey. Certain firms have offered for me to leave. And one of the reasons that I've stayed here with my two firms is because I feel I could just be me. You gamble on yourself sometimes. And I had a run-in with a young public defender this week. And Tim Livingston, who is an amazing lawyer in Livingston County, I don't know if he's tuned in right now, but he's a role model of mine. And I remember way back when, being in the Livingston County Court, morning, Bridget, against a prosecutor who was more seasoned than me, more talented than me at the time, and I was scared. I was scared because somebody's life is in my hands. The case was assigned to me from Grable. I don't want to make Scott look bad. And Tim Livingston, he may not remember this, but it will always stick with me. He pulled me into the hallway. And he whispered in my ear some things an older lawyer that was seen experience would provide to a younger lawyer. And that day kind of brought me back to a lot of different places and making me think everything was okay. Always be grateful to Tim Livingston for that. I mean, that little gesture of his time changed my life, changed my career. And when I see his daughter and son doing good things in the field of law, I'm like, wow, imagine having Tim Livingston as your father. Because he was a father figure to me in that moment. And I think sometimes in this field, we need to be that big brother. We need to be that person that the young lawyer needs to vent to, needs to help. And as I'm going to this court, and it's not Washington, let's be clear about that, because I know Washington is watching me hard right now, and it's cool. I've said what I said on cases. I stand behind everything I say. And I know there's some people in Washington have a real problem with me right now. And let me be clear, I have a real problem with them as well. But something about the court, there's something amazing about the court system. And no matter what, the big job offers, the Google hits, the money, whatever, we're walking into somebody's home, right? When I say walk into somebody's home, that judge, those jury members, whatever, that's their home. And here you are, you walk in as the outsider. You may look the part, you may do this, you may do that, but they tell you it's your turn to speak. And what you are is you're like this magician for a few minutes, and you're flipping your knives, or whatever the hell you're doing. And you're trying to show that your show is important to keep their attention. But no matter who we are, what we are, it's always an honor to be in their court. And the court system is bigger than we are. And people forget about that. Hell, I think I've forgotten about that. But sometimes you get reminded of stuff. As I'm driving to this court, I felt like Spotify was reading my mind. I'm tired. I'm grumpy. I'm overworked. I'm this, I'm that. And Gaslight Anthem comes on. And this amazing song, History Books, gets played. And History Books is about escaping your past. And I think that's a battle each one of us have every day, right? Our experiences make up who we are. Jimmy Eat World comes on. And the song Let It Happen is blaring. And that's a song about lost loves and first impressions. And then Taking Back Sunday comes on, Your Own Disaster. And that's a powerful track. But these are all Jersey bands. These are all bands that played a role in our youth if you grew up in Jersey. And I realize as I'm getting older,
there's more Jersey in me than I realize, maybe more than I care to, but it's also the survival mechanism of being Jersey. But hearing those songs on the way to court, Hey Mary, it brought me back to a different time. And it made me think of Tim Livingston. It made me think of the ghetto of Atlantic City. It made me think of a lot of things. And I'm in a different mindset. And the mindset is, number one, fight time. Number two, protection. And then gratitude. Gratitude, because I realized as I'm driving to this court, and I was paid a ton of money to go to this court to fix this problem, and we are the main event that day. I'm walking in, and part of me is really proud of how hard I worked to get to this point. Another part of me is like, okay, I gotta fix this, I gotta fix that. And the work ethic, there's this fear. And anybody that's been really poor can relate to this. There is this fear that if I don't perform a certain way, I'm going to be poor again. I'm going to be broke and desperate. And I mean, and probably nothing could be further from the truth, but Ducktown doesn't leave you. It sits with you. And the lessons you learn in Ducktown are there for better and for worse. It is a marriage, and there's no divorce. There's no separation. There's no trial run. There's no open relationship. You and Ducktown are married and joined at the hip for life. And it's always going to be like that. And Ducktown protects you. Ducktown loves you, but Ducktown hates you. And Ducktown tells you all these things that go through your mind. You got to control that. And my case is done. And there's this little public defender. And I've seen her around. And this is a kid. I mean, she can't be more than 26 years old. And I'm watching her get run over by the seasoned prosecutor. And I'm shaking hands with certain people there. And, you know, lawyers sometimes, it's like a scene from Mean Girls, you know. The court-appointed lawyers sit together. The retained lawyers sit together. The public defenders sit together. And they're all talking shit about each other, right? Now, as somebody who's been the court-appointed guy when I was a young kid, as somebody who's worked part-time for a public defender's office, and as somebody who now is that retained lawyer, I'm friends with all these people. And I guess friends is too powerful of a word, right? But I realize we're all part of this criminal defense club. We're in this club, right? And we're supposed to watch out for each other, but unfortunately, we eat our own. The retained lawyers think they're superior to everybody else. The court-appointed people are usually running from court to court trying to pay their mortgage. The public defenders, and I'm stereotyping, many of them took the job so they could have nights and weekends off and have balance in their life for less money. But who's the best of these lawyers is completely up for debate. And guys, I'm going to tell you, it depends on the day of the week. So I'm talking to all these people, and here's this kid. And she's up at the podium. And this seasoned prosecutor, who's a piece of garbage, thanks, cuz, is beating her up. And I walk by, and I whisper in her ear, ask the judge to pass your case. And she looks at me, and she knows who I am. And she goes, Your Honor, may I pass the case? And the judge goes, okay, no problem. So come on, let's go in the back. So I take her back to this little room. And in this court, there's this little, these tiny conference rooms, which would make a gym locker be impressive, right? These little tiny rooms. I said, what's going on? And she goes, well, and she's crying her eyes out. I'm like, hey, calm down. This will be okay. Tell me what's going on, because I know that prosecutor. I know they're trying to play games with you. Just tell me about the case. Give me like a 5-minute synopsis. And you gotta remember, at this point, I've done my shtick. I've juggled. I've impressed. It's time to move on. And I never have time for the gossip, guys. I know a lot of people talk shit about me, but pre-COVID, I was going from court to court, so I never had time to gossip. Never had a desire for it, because I had more work to do. In the Zoom era, I was juggling three devices to Zoom, and then in this combo era, I'm either running to court or Zooming on my phone or doing this or doing that. And to be honest, on paper, I don't have time to talk to this kid. I've got to go to my next court. But I also realize this kid is drowning. And if you don't help one of your own when they're drowning, who the hell are you? So she starts breaking down the case. And then I say to her, ask for the body and dash cam. Tell the court you did not receive the body and dash cam. She says, well, no, they gave me all the paperwork. Said, okay. Did you read the reports? Yeah. How many times did you read them? She goes, 4 or 5 times. Okay. That's a sign of a young, hungry lawyer who's trying so goddamn hard. And some of these cases are impossible. If a lawyer tells you they never lost a case, I'm going to call that lawyer out as being a liar. We don't talk about our losses. We talk about our wins, right? Because we're in this mode to advertise and present this image. And guys, we're all human beings. Yeah, people think I'm this amazing lawyer. I've done some amazing things, luckily. And it's going to come back in a minute how that all started. But we've all had our bad days. And this kid was having this bad day, but it wasn't her fault. The prosecutor held discovery back on her. Said, in the discovery, knowing this particular county, did they reference body and dash cam? Yes. Okay. Did the prosecutor provide you the body and dash cam? No. Standard shit. Tell the judge, you need an adjournment to study the body and dash cam. What's up, Amber? And the judge listens to this kid as she goes up to the podium, sitting behind her. She goes, Your Honor, I need the body and dash cam. It was not provided by the prosecution. What's up, Joe? And the judge smirks, looking at me, knowing that I schooled this kid to make that request. And the prosecutor, who's just a piece of garbage, is like slamming her fist down. We provide everything we have. And she looks at me and I say, I'm like, tell her, go with it, run with it, run with it. Because now you just punch the bully back. Because, Your Honor, I made the request and we didn't get this discovery. And the judge turns to the prosecutor. Why did you get a discovery? Well, we have to request it. Well, I suggest you request it. 30-day adjournment. Now this kid looks like a superstar to her client. And I'm going to tell you, if they didn't hand over the body and dash cam, that means there's something beneficial to this kid's case. So I'm walking out. She's walking out. And she's just really upset. She goes, look, I'm breaking up with my boyfriend. They gave me these bigger caseloads. She goes, you always seem to have anything under control. I don't. My personal life's in disaster. I said, listen, here's what you have to realize. Life is not going to stop. And I don't know what's going on with your boyfriend. I don't know what's going on with your caseloads. But I'm going to tell you, when you walk into court, this is your escape from all the bullshit that life will present. The only thing you need to do is focus on your job. And she looked at me like I just imparted this crazy knowledge. She goes, how do you seem to have it under control? And I told her, I gotta go. Here's my business card. If you need to talk more, you let me know. But I've gotta run right now to my next court. You hang in there. She followed up with this Facebook DM and said, listen, how do you have it under control? She goes, I really need to know. It's going to help me moving forward. I said, okay, I'll discuss it in a live. And here we are. And it goes back to Miss Gandia. It goes back to the ghetto of Ducktown. When I first walked into a courtroom, I was 16 years old. And I was terrified. And guys, let me be really clear. Anxiety and pressure, that's real. That shit is real. And if you don't feel some anxiety before the big game, then you shouldn't be playing the game. The key is to control it to the best of your ability. And once you get flowing, you're flowing. Once you're in that game, own the game. But the moments leading up to the game can be frustrating. And I'm nervous because I'm on this mock trial team. And here I am. I'm the poor Italian kid with all the wealthy Jewish Margate kids on this team. They don't want me. And I walk into this courtroom in Atlanta County. And Miss Gandia is there. And I'm looking around and she pats me on the shoulder and she goes, Amadeo, listen, I know things are tough at home. And at home, Aunt Mary was sick. Grandpa just died. Mom was in an abusive relationship. The ghetto was the ghetto. We were poor. It was violent. My animals were my salvation. But what Gandhi taught me was two things that day. This courtroom is your cathedral. This is your escape from the outside world. Because in this courtroom, we're all equal. And you can own the show. And for that time you're in court, you could forget about all the shit going on in the outside world. When you're out of court, you will have to find a way to survive on the way home. You can be depressed that nobody wants to go to the prom with you. You can be concerned that you want to beat up your mom's boyfriend. You can have all that shit because it's going to be there. But when you're in this court, own that and respect it. Because this court gave you the ability to escape. And as time moves on, it's going to give you the ability to truly escape. It's going to provide the money to get your family out. People are going to look at you differently. Your appearance is going to change. Your demeanor is going to change. But don't you ever change. When you're in that court, when you're living that moment, respect it. And remember, you add something to it, but we are the court's guest. So when this kid says, how do I have it all under control? As she's got her 40 files, and she's depressed over life, and she's trying to handle these calls after hours. Here's why I appear to have it under control. Because I know I'm lucky enough to be part of the process. I don't apologize for being successful. I can't. That's my ego. But I have to show gratitude because the court system gave us this opportunity. And we all have it. And whether you're that court-appointed lawyer who's trying to pay the bills, or that retained lawyer going for your next big case, or that public defender that's trying to balance life, we're all equal. We're part of this amazing system. And I think sometimes, and I'm guilty of this, we forget the appreciation we're supposed to have for the court system. It becomes about us as opposed to the system. And guys, the system is broken. The system is screwed up. There is socioeconomic discrimination. There is racial discrimination. There is political prosecutions. And I could go on and on and on. But the system that we chose to be part of, that system gave us all a way out. And whether that way out is from a bad relationship, or from poverty, or from physical or emotional abuse, or whatever cross you are particularly bearing, it all gets put on pause when you walk into the system. And for that, our profession is the most amazing therapy one could ever ask for. And I think far too often we lose sight of how lucky we are to be part of this process. And that is how I appear to have everything under control. And for those of you that actually know me, it's not always the case. But image is critical in this world. And unfortunately, image overrides substance. But substance, at the end of the day, is a more powerful entity. And this is simply the game of life in the criminal justice system.
The Jail Visit with attorney Bill Amadeo from McManus and Amadeo. Connect with McManus and Amadeo at McManusAmadeo.com or call 800-392-7311. This is The Jail Visit on Shiawassee Radio.
We're going to discuss a blind date gone terribly wrong. And I blame my mom and my aunt for this one, but they both rest in peace. So, let's go back to a few things. Thank you, Joey. Number one, the year was 2006. And we are on about to go on a term break from law school. And this is the time when people didn't put their real names on social media. And the name Turtle Girl comes to mind. I'm going to change real names. Again, potential lawsuits and stuff. But these stories, this is one of the weirder ones, I think. So, at Cooley, when we came in August of 2004, there were 1,278 students. We graduated with under 300, and Cooley's business model back then was to take people who were at risk. They would fail out. Get as much tuition as they can, call it a day. When you got to like your fourth term, there was this somewhat of a fake bond, if you would. And when I say a fake bond, you were connected to people you may not have really liked in the outside world, but you know, you kind of felt like you went through this thing together, so there's this false bondhood, right? And there was this one guy, we'll just call him Ed. I did not care for this guy. But Ed and I had a lot of common classes because he was from New York and I was from New Jersey. And he was an amazing law student. He's done shit in the real world. Shocking, right? As a law student, this guy was on top of the world. And he was one of these guys that was like working for the SBA, Student Bar Association, tutoring. He was the TA for so many classes. He had this horrible voice. Like, really? Remember, he used to say, I can get all D's the rest of my time here and graduate. Okay. And you gotta understand something. But a lot of these people, especially the unattractive ones, this was their first time to be cool, right? I mean, let's be real. They weren't cool in high school. They weren't cool in college. The real world beat them up a little bit. Now they're getting good grades at a fourth tier law school, and they thought, hey, I am the shit. So they had to hang on to those 3 years the rest of their life. And this guy was annoying as hell. I was doing like this risk utility test. Like, how much do I dislike him versus how much I feel bad for him? And this one Halloween, he comes into school. Now, people would dress up at Halloween. Halloween at Cooley was weird, right? I would wear a hoodie. But other people kind of took it to different levels. And this one Halloween, he was a pumpkin. And dude, bro went all out to be a pumpkin. Like, he was pumpkined out. I mean, he is like rolling down the halls, dressed as this orange creature. I don't know. And you can imagine the frustration in law school. We're all hostile. He's getting taunted by people. He's getting made fun of people. I didn't taunt and make fun of people. I just want to be left the hell alone. But because I wasn't an asshole to this guy, he thought we were cool. Let me be clear. I did not like him. But I wasn't mean to him. I tried to avoid him. I had my group. You know, I'm with the failed athletes. I'm the guy that studies till 2 o'clock in the morning. I kind of want to be left alone. I would date without going out. It was very... Law school was different for me. But there was this little luncheonette place we all used to go. little breakfast and lunch place. And the whole Cooley crew would go there. And I'm there after finals one day, eating lunch. And I'm giving off like a million visual clues to leave me alone. I'm in a corner booth. I've got my headphones in. I'm reading a newspaper. Because back then you didn't read the internet on your phone. And I'm just trying to avoid everyone. I'm going to eat my lunch. I'm done finals. I'm going to head back to my apartment at Village Green. I'm flying out to Jersey the next day to go see Aunt Mary and Mom. And that was my plan, right? It was, okay, grab a quick bite, get the hell out of town. In walks my ex-girlfriend. And she sees me. Now, there's plenty of distance to avoid each other. And I'm trying to avoid her. She brings this new guy in. And I'm like, heads down, reading the newspaper. Ah, shit, I don't want to see her. I don't want to deal with her crap today. She sits down with this new guy. And of course, she walks up to me. And walking up to me was like a scene. And like, she would do like this thing when she walked, like, be real loud. And like, flip her hair. Like, okay. Everybody had to hear that she was walking down the hall. She walks down, she says, why are you looking at me? I'm like, what are you talking about? And I said to her, I am literally crouched in a corner, eating my corned beef sandwich, with headphones on, reading a newspaper, and I'm trying to avoid you and everybody else right now. If I had any food in the house, I was a horrible shopper in law school, I would have just ate at home. I'm not even looking at you. Just, well, I think you're looking at me. I'm like, okay, I'm not. She goes, why aren't you looking at me? Like, oh my God. Wait, listen, clearly you're with this other guy. Enjoy your lunch or whatever it is. So she grabs him, like, we're getting out of here. Now, right there, that was a sign it was going to be a weird day, right? All right. So, the annoying guy that was dressed like a pumpkin, he was there. And this guy, like I say, always talked about his grades, and he was annoying as shit. But he's having an altercation at the counter. The owner of the luncheonette apparently had a major gambling problem. And they stopped taking credit card payments from people. They only wanted cash. And this guy never had cash. Like, he never had cash on him. He always would pay with a credit card. And you could hear him argue. He's like, oh no, I don't have cash on me. And the owner of the luncheonette is like, well, you're going to go to Character and Fitness and never be a lawyer now. Okay. Let's stop there for a minute. He starts crying. Now, the ex walked out with her new man. This dude I can't stand is crying. I can't eat lunch in peace. And he is, like, sobbing. Like, he thinks because this company will not accept his credit card payment for his lousy tuna sandwich, he is going to not be a lawyer. Okay. I walk into the situation. And sometimes being the fixer sucks, right? But I don't like this guy, but I don't want to see him cry. I mean, what? Why is this guy crying? I go up to the waitress, look, I'll take care of his bill, okay? Okay, hey man, have a good term break. I got you. I'll pay, I'll tip. Just enjoy your break. So I go back to my little cubby hole. He comes up to me. So he's looking at this like an invite. We're boys now, right? Oh, you really helped me out there. Like, okay. Dude, listen. You were in a bad spot. I hope you enjoy your break. I'm sure, hey, Lorianne, I'm sure you will have a good break, right? I'm going to finish my sandwich and I'm going to head home because I got a lot of stuff I got to do. So he starts telling me his whole life story. You know, I'm from New York and this and that. I'm like, uh-huh. So he asked for my phone number. He goes, well, maybe we can hang out. I'm over in New Jersey. I'm like, oh, yeah, but you live in New York, right? Probably not going to happen. But I give him my number. And so here you go. Yeah, give me a call sometime. And that was it. Now let me stop you there. He said we should hang out. I'm being nice, like, yeah, sure. We'll definitely we'll catch a game. Idiot's gone. The X is gone. I'm paying these tabs. I'm finishing my sandwich. I'm going home to Village Green. Okay, have to take my cats in to be bored for a couple days. Want to watch a movie or something, and I'm good. This is over. And at the time, Mom is a year from death. Aunt Mary's not feeling well, so my trips back home are really about caregiving for Aunt Mary and Mom. Now, here's the thing about the girls, as we call them, Aunt Mary and Mom. Amazing people. Aunt Mary raised me, owe her everything. Mom was like my big sister, had me real young, but we were very close-knit. And me coming home from law school for term break was a big deal, but I would take Mom to her doctor's appointments. I'd take them to the White House, get them their treats, whatever it was errand boy time. It really wasn't a time to go unwind. That was the goal going back home, to be a caregiver for my family. And I accepted that, and I was pleased with that. And then the car ride happened. I'm in the car with the girls, Aunt Mary and Mom, and we're heading to the White House sub shop to get them their sandwiches. And Mom's in the front seat, Aunt Mary's in the back seat, and if you knew the girls, they didn't shut up. They also had a way of going through your phone. Now, I had a rental car, and the phone was on the charger. And Mom wasn't really good with cell phones, but she liked touching them, right? So the phone rings. It's that guy, Ed. And Mom picks up the phone, and she puts it on speaker accidentally. She goes, "Hello?" And he's like, "Oh, hi, is Bill there?" She's like, "Oh, yeah, he's here. Who's this?" "Oh, it's Ed." Now, mind you, I'm literally like, I would let this thing go to voicemail, right? But Mom's chatting with this guy now. Hey, Mary's trying to, "Oh, hi, Ed. How are you? Billy was telling us about you." "Yeah, I was telling them that this idiot didn't have money at the luncheonette and was crying. Now he's calling me up." He goes, "Oh, yeah, can we hang out?" I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I'm dealing with Aunt Mary and Mom, and I got responsibilities. I'm sorry we can't catch up. I can't travel all the way to New York." He says, "Well, I'm in Millville tonight." Millville was like a half hour from Atlantic City. And Aunt Mary goes, "Oh, honey, that's great. You're only a half hour away. Yes, Billy will hang out with you tonight." He goes, "Oh, and I got big news. We're getting a double date." I'm like, "Oh, God." And I'm thinking, the woman that's dating Ed, this can't be good. Hey, Jason. No, Nancy, it's not. And I'm like, the woman that's dating Ed, this has got to be horrible, right? But the worst part is, I'm getting the tag along. I'm getting the tag along. So I'm getting the worst part of the deal. This is like when Jerry found out his ex-girlfriend was dating Newman. And he's like, it's not bad enough that she dated Newman, as disturbing as this, but Newman thought he was too good for her. And I'm thinking, I am literally going to be the wingman for this guy I can't stand. And I'm getting Turtle Girl. So I don't want to go, but Aunt Mary and Mom got me on this friggin' date now. So Ed is pumped up. And he tells me, we're going to a haunted hayride, then we're going to a murder mystery. Okay. So, I said, should I, meet you in Millville? And I'm bitching at Mary and Mom's, I'm buying them their food. Like, I this is gonna be horrible. You got me on a double date with this moron, these two women that probably, this is not gonna be fun. And Aunt Mary and Mom are laughing their ass off. Ha ha ha! Oh, it'll be a good time. You'll have a good story. So we're going to meet these people. Meet us the Haunted Hayride. Now, ironically, they didn't buy tickets for the Haunted Hayride. I didn't have a lot of money in law school. Apparently, I had more than them. So I I pay for my date, right? But not paying for Ed and his date. So I get there. Oh, did you get the tickets? What? So now I'm concerned. Did you get the tickets for the murder mystery either? No. But you can pay at the door. So he did the research, you know, you can pay at the door. And I set the goddamn precedent by buying this moron's tuna sandwich. So of course Bill could afford the Haunted Hayride. So we get to the Haunted Hayride. And you gotta understand something. It's a hayride in the farmland of New Jersey. And these idiots, Ed, Turtle Girl, and his date, like, oh, I hope we don't get killed. And I'm thinking, I don't think there's gonna be a lot of assaults at these hayrides or they wouldn't be in business, right? But I said, okay, B, don't say this shit. You're gonna wreck their evening. Do not keep your sarcasm in check. So we're on this haunted hayride, and they're like screaming. These people are coming out with like axes. Oh my god, we're gonna get killed! And I'm sitting there like, okay. I mean, to my knowledge, nobody's ever been killed at a haunted hayride in New Jersey. And I've just got like this blank look on my face. And unfortunately, this is before you could just text friends. 2006, man, it was like a dime for every text. Like, the next C had to hit that one three times. So, oh, all right. So after the hayride is over, we go to the murder mystery, which ironically was not far from the hayride. And again, these people are lost, right? Nobody gets killed in a murder mystery. It's a show! So, we get into the murder mystery. I see this journalist from the Atlantic City Press I knew a little bit. We'll just call him Rick. I say, hey, Rick, how have you been? And he goes, sir, my name is Thurston, and I did not kill Rebecca. All right. These people are in character. At this point, the sarcasm starts coming out. And Ed and the girl's like, ooh, have you ever been to a murder mystery before? And I'm like, well, where I grew up, there was a murder mystery almost every week. Like, they didn't get it. You know, grew up poor, white in the ghetto. People got killed. But, you know. So, my jokes are being missed. And this murder mystery went on forever. And, you know, so that was fine. At the end of the evening, I'm like, oh, can I get the hell out of here, please? I got like a 35-minute ride to get back to my family, and I'm looking forward to seeing them at this point more than I was initially, because I'm like, wow, please send me on an errand. Gotta get away from these freaks. And then Ed gets the courage. Hey, ladies, how about we go back to your place? And I'm thinking, okay, these people, they can't possibly live together, right? I'm like, oh, you know, we'd be going to two different places. We don't know each other that well. Luckily, they live together in a trailer in Millville. Our trailer park is like 12 minutes from the murder mystery place. And I'm thinking, huh, Jesus Christ. Like, do these people, is their whole entertainment, the hayride, the murder mystery, their trailer, is everything like a 12-minute radius or something? I don't know. So we go back to the trailer, and the furniture was very interesting. And there was like old pictures of the two of them doing everything, ironically, quite off that haunted hayrides. Like, oh, this is the haunted hayride in 2004. That's great. So Ed and his date, they go do whatever they do. And I'm sitting out there with this nut. And she's talking to me. Tell me her whole life story. Unsolicited things. You know? You know, and I went on a blind date once. And that son of a bitch won at stake. And I wasn't having that. Like, what? And I'm looking. There's all these pictures of two of the girls. But there's this one picture of her and this guy. Like, oh, who's that? She goes, that's my ex-boyfriend. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm, I understand. When'd you guys break up? Oh, last night. Oh, God. This freaking guy's going to show up. So what I gathered was Turtle Girl is with Ed's girl, depressed over the dude that she broke up with. Ed's got a cool guy from law school who's going to pay for the friggin' haunted hayrides and the murder mystery to make weird guy jealous. And I'm thinking to myself, as luck would have it, this guy's going to show up, right? And he does. And he starts screaming at me, "You think you're going to take my girl?" I'm like, "No, she's yours." We're like staring at each other. And then he's yelling and screaming, and I'm trying to get Lance to get him. I'm like, "Look, bro." And I remember I said, "Look, bro, chill out." He goes, "I'm not your bro." I'm like, "Yeah, no shit. We look a lot different, don't we?" And I'm becoming an asshole at this point. And I'm thinking, well, if this is the end, at least you got with a good story. I don't know. I want to get the hell out of there. Ed says, he comes out of the bedroom. He's like, "Oh, no, you can't leave." And I'm like, "Dude, you and her are obviously hitting it off. I'm with this other turtle girl, this nut. Her boyfriend's here. We're in the middle of freaking Millville. What am I needed for here? Can I just go to hell home?" Jesus. And her boyfriend starts talking shit. And he says, "You don't have the chops to sing karaoke." I thought he was going to call me out. They had this karaoke machine. Now, I don't know what it was about what he said to me right there. But I'm like, "What did you say, you son of a bitch? I can't sing karaoke? You bastard." And I don't have a good voice, but that night I was going to sing karaoke my ass off. And I start playing these different songs and I'm singing karaoke and I am sticking it to him. Like, and I'm like, "Ha, you don't have the skills, do you? You don't have it." And I'm like yelling at him. I'm pissed off. Now, the girls want to sing. There's two songs I have a hard time listening to anymore because of this night. One was Kiss Me Deadly by Lita Ford, which was a really cool song as a kid. And the other one was I Quit by Hepburn from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And these two girls did duets of these. And I gotta tell you, the first four times, it was fine. They did at least 10 times. Now, at this point, I've had enough of this shit. I'm on this horrible date, which I blame Aunt Mary and Mom for. I just got done term break. This idiot with the pumpkin elf, who's getting better grades than me at the time, is like, he's become a leech. I get the hell out of there. So I leave, and it was snowing outside, and the snow was piled up against the friggin' door. Now, I can't leave. And I say to Turtle Girl, "When does the snow get plowed?" 6 a.m. It's like 1:30 at this point. And I'm like pissed. Can I jump out a window? What do I do? Well, the boyfriend of the girl I was seeing starts crying. And I never seen me these are guys in Jersey and they're crying. And he starts crying that he thinks his girl likes me more than her, and I become a relationship counselor for an hour. So what do you think you need to do to understand her needs? I don't freaking know. I'm thinking, oh my God. If this was only 2023 where I could just text someone for help. Couldn't. And I am literally coaching the two of them through their relationship while being stuck in the snow in a trailer on term break in December of 2006. And I don't know what I said. You know, it's one of those things you go on like cruise control and you're just rambling. Whatever I said impressed the hell out of both of them. And they make a pitch to me. And it was a pitch that I was not going to partake in. At this point, as they are drunk and propositioning me, I literally get out of the friggin' thing, sledge through the snow, take my hoodie off, wipe the snow off my car, and I make it back to Aunt Mary and Mom. And that, my friends, was a horrible bad date from 2006. Okay. I'm Bill Amadeo, and I wish this story wasn't true, but it is. Have a good one.
The proceeding was a paid presentation by McManus and Amadeo PLLC. Listeners of this program should contact their attorney to obtain advice with respect to any particular legal matter. No listener should act or refrain from acting on the basis of information within this program without first seeking legal advice from counsel in the relevant jurisdiction. Only your individual attorney can provide assurances that the information and your interpretation of it is applicable or appropriate to your particular situation. Listening to this program using any associated website or related links or resources does not create an attorney-client relationship between the listener and host, contributors, or contributing law firms. All liability with respect to actions taken or not taken based on the contents of this program are hereby expressly disclaimed. You and your loved ones deserve a criminal defense firm that believes that your life and freedom are worth fighting for. Matt McManus, Bill Amadeo, and the McManus and Amadeo team of attorneys, investigators, and case managers will take the lead with a vast knowledge and legal experience across the state of Michigan to get the best possible result for you. Learn more at McManusAmadeo.com. Schedule a free consultation 24/7 by calling 800-392-7311.